Welcome, everybody, to Headlines. My name is Elchanan Schwartz. I'm here with my good friend, Shadchan Yisroel. You may know him as Freddie Friedman. And also joining us in studio this week is my good friend from Chicago, Illinois, Nisanel Nathan Davis. And for those of you expecting David, sorry to disappoint you. But we're going to do a little bit of a different show this week.
Everybody was expecting David, and now it's just us.
Yeah, and I understand why they're disappointed, but I hope that they'll stick around long enough.
Don't turn off your radio just yet.
For us to, or whatever medium you're using, to tell you a little bit about what we're going to do.
I feel like out of the 70,000 listeners, we just lost 5 of them. We're down to 65.
They don't even want to hear what we have to say. Well, you know what? David will be back next week, and we're only going to do this occasionally to give him a little bit of a break. But the idea here, maybe it'll appeal to some of our younger listeners, is to bring in someone who's a successful businessman from an industry and hear a little bit about what they do and hear about a little bit about what the challenges are, both from a business standpoint as well as from a shkafa or a halachic standpoint, and hear a little bit about what they do, what it's like to be in that business, and how they can contribute, most importantly, to Klal Yisrael. And most of these people that we're going to be bringing are doing wonderful things. Aside, they're businessmen second, and askanim first.
And it's really going to be very, very exciting. We're going to get into the discussion as it comes to the issues in dealing with nursing homes in Halacha and Hashkafa. We have Rabbi Yosef Kushner is going to be here later. Saul Werdiger, like we said, is going to be here later. But let's just start for a second this Headlines Decaffeinated show by getting to know our hosts. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Yisroel Freddie Friedman, better known as just Fred by a lot of my friends and peers. Started making shidduchim about 11 years ago. I was hired.
How'd you do that, by the way? Started making shidduchim 11 years.
I just saw that shidduchim was a place that I wanted to be.
Did you know right away that you were going to be good at it?
Yeah.
How many shidduchim did you make?
And I make a couple hundred.
A couple hundred.
Al tiftach be. Is that the right word that I'm saying there? Al tiftach be.
No.
I've learned that it never hurts to throw that.
No, not Bli Einar. Yeah, can I know her? I made 300 whatever. A couple hundred shidduchim.
Bli Einar.
And I hope that's to make.
It never hurts to throw in Al tiftach be.
When I come home from work, the first thing I do on that is like Al tiftach be. Boo boo boo.
Well, that's you're telling your wife Al tiftach be. Don't open your mouth.
It just gets the name.
Al tiftach be. Just Al Tiftach. That's it.
And you only read shidduchim for like wealthy people, or
I mean, I've made shidduchim where I've gotten paid like $150 and a tablecloth. So it wasn't even a tablecloth because I had to split it in half with somebody who gave me the idea, so it ended up becoming a Stender cover. Why don't we turn this over to the main reason why we're here, and that is Headlines with Elchanan Schwartz, LCSW, MSW. LHRPPCW. Like everything has to end with a W, you know? MSW.
Except for my actual degree, which has no W.
Really?
Affiliated with it.
What is that degree called?
It's LMHC in New York, licensed mental health counselor. And in New Jersey, it's an LPC.
Is that above psychologist or below psychologist?
Well, and a psychologist is this is a master's level degree. A psychologist is a PhD, so they went back to school.
So this is below that.
Well, it depends. If you're anti-college, this is actually better because
so
you
want anti-college.
You not go to college.
I'm right. Saying if you are, for people like some people,
so are
in
you
the
more anti-college?
Yeshivish communities want to come to me because they want to go to someone who has a degree, but
less of a degree. I can see myself thinking that it's pashnish to go to a guy with a degree.
A psychologist, a psychiatra, the guy that has.
Why
like,
would I want to go to someone who like spent like $100,000 on getting a really good education when I can go to someone?
Well, you want to know something interesting? Is that we went to a bar in Leib Steinman once, and I was there with a partner, and he asked him, do you have Yidden in your nursing homes? He said, yeah, I think so. He goes, well, how do you serve them the Velas and Trefus? And that's a good question, by the way. We have Nathan. What do we do?
Because you own the nursing homes, and you're giving Jews
Nevelis and Trefus. So what have you done for that in the past? Like, how do you get around that problem?
Well, first of all, on a very, very high 30,000-foot level, anybody who's in the nursing home business has a shtar. Now, the shtar is something which I'm not going to go into because it's very, it is.
It's the shtar
sells, a lot of times they sell the kitchen, they sell the facility profits with the whole shtar, which is written up, because it's open on Shabbos, and the problem is that there are people doing work for you on Shabbos, uh-huh. and that's also a problem that you run into in a 24/7 service business. Problem. Yeah, and Vail Shabbos is also a problem, and some shtars sell the entire kitchen. And they sell, they sell everything, so they're really not part of that business, which is it's controversial.
Like selling, it's
and
like
I'm not
selling
the vomits. So it is something that it's something that you have to take care of, and you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi.
I'm saying, but
there are ways to do it. Of course, there are. Well, like I said, I mentioned a few. So we also offer the anybody that you know is Jewish in your home, you offer them kosher food.
Yeah, but that doesn't help you in Wichita, Kansas.
You can get kosher food anywhere in the world. There's all different levels of that thing, and Nevelis and Travis are obviously the most concerning,
right?
And it is not a simple
serving
thing.
Serving chametz on Pesach to somebody that you don't know is even Jewish, also concerning.
Well, you sell the home. Yeah, it's all you're right.
Selling the home
doesn't help you. It's obviously something that being in the business, you really have to research and really understand all these Shabbos, Nevelis and Travis. There's a chametz. There's a lot of things that you have to
the
worry
go-to
about.
Rav in Chicago is Reb Zev Cohn.
Yeah, so I was going to mention that what we've created actually in Chicago, because you mentioned a lot of people in the business, and Chicago is for some reason known as nursing home city.
Right.
They actually created a halachic group of about 100 operators, and there's a lunch and learn that takes place like almost every 2-3 months in someone else's office each time. Uh-huh. And Reb Zev Cohn has been presenting. It's from his Chayshe Mishpakel, and he comes and he talks about these exact things that we're faced with in our business and how to, I don't say work around them,
address
but work
them.
Address them, work with them. Now, it's not always in the 9 out of 10 times, I'm being serious, he says, Rabbi, I really don't have a really good Eitzah for you. And it's something that people should look into. And I'm in the business, and something that I take very seriously. And I have my Rav, but I learned from my father, who was in it for 50 years, uh-huh. that you always have to be talking to a Rav.
We have one of the big Bekiyim in this area of Halacha with us here, Rav Yosef Kushner, who's a dying in the Beis Avad. He's a Rav, Mechaber Sforim. He wrote the Sefer Commerce on Shabbos. Commerce and Shabbos, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And he is also the member of a newly formed Kailul. Can we call it a Kailul here in Lakewood? That has been put together by Rabbanim with a lot of Chashuv Talmid Chacham to discuss and learn these issues that come up. Nursing home is something that so many people are involved in Klal Yisrael. And as Nisanel told us, there's so many issues that can come up. So they put together, correct me if I'm wrong here, this kailo to learn through these sugyas. Is that an accurate way of describing what you're doing?
I mean, a kailo is a loose description of it, but it's right. Yeah, I'm more like a committee. The truth is, I don't know why we're picking on the nursing home industry. It seems like
it's
I walked
industry,
into the middle
yeah.
of a conversation, and today we decided to pick on the nursing home industry. But every industry really has its challenges halakhically. But the nursing home seems to have a...
Right, and actually that's what we're going to do in this show is bring in people from different industries right. and discuss. It
before,
doesn't seem that
before,
worried about that.
I want to just say something about the nursing home industry and the halachas that are relevant to it. Because this is actually something that came up right before Yom Tov. This is something that I found. There's a certain ideology that people have. I don't know where it comes from. I mean, maybe I do know where it comes from. But they have a certain, people feel like being that they're Yidden, they have a God-given right to own a nursing home or to own any business they have, and then halacha has to conform to it. And I'll just give an example. I got a call. I'm not being megazim. Erev Shabbos before Shavuos, and this fellow calls me and he tells me it was like 11 o'clock. I just closed on it happened to be on a daycare facility, but similar to
assisted
a nursing
living.
Home. Yeah, assisted living facility. He just closed and. And now Shabbos is coming, so what do I do? And it's like my problem. Like, what are you going to do to take care of this for me? So I said, so explain me. You were going out, and you were, like, looking for Tzarchi Shabbos. You were buying challahs, and then you saw a for sale sign on a building. And the guy selling his facility. And you walked in, and you bought it. How much you want? $2 million. 1.8, we got a deal. Here's your money. And he walked out, and now you called me. So he's, like, quiet. I said, how long are you in contract with this? So he's like, 18 months. 18 months! You know what? First of all, 18 months. He's in contract on a bill. I said, 18 months you just spent, and now you're done. And now the last thing we have to take care of is Shabbos. You know? And that's a certain... And it's my problem. I'm like, I can't... I really can't help you right now. I'm really sorry. He's like, what do you mean? Shabbos is coming. What are you going to do? And what do you mean? I have a right to buy a nursing home, and you have to take care of this. And that's... The way it works is businesses have to really conform to halacha. And that's... Actually, I was in Chicago...
But let me ask you something.
I wanted to say one more thing.
There you go.
There's a halacha... in Chicago, just this past week, I did a Yachikala on Hilchas Yichud. Mm-hmm. And certain cases where it becomes very, very difficult. There's a halacha of a person who has a business, Misha Oskav Mnoshim, which means he's doing things, he's selling things, products that ladies need. So because they need it, so therefore there's no heter, even if there's like 5 or 10 ladies.
What's
in the
this
office.
Heter called?
It's not, it's an Isser. Misha Oskav Mnoshim. If someone who's selling, let's say, Shetels,
yeah.
So there's a lot of constant problem of Yichud. So the Shulchan Aruch brings like this. It says, there's a problem of yichud, and all the heterim that you usually have do not have in this case, like baila b'ir, whatever. We're not going into details. It seems like it's like there's nothing to do. So the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch, which is lashon Rambam, is mayase. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what the Shulchan Aruch says? Yifane lemalacha acheres. Get a new job. You know, mm-hmm. and people. And I'm not saying everyone has to get new jobs, but there's a point in halacha where halacha does not conform to your situation.
Nassanal, so, are you you're looking for a new job?
No, I'm just saying people should realize that it's not, the pshat is that I have a nursing home, I have a business, and I know business money.
But there was
business is halik. I realized that, and business is tzchar limud, and business is shalom bayis, and business is chinuch habanim. Because without money, it's all gonna just go in the air. It's gonna be a problem. Yeah. All these things are gonna be a problem, but. Im calls that halacha does not conform to the business. People have to realize that even if it's a problem, it's a problem, and they have to solve the problem.
So could we, because for people who aren't familiar like me, because I don't have a nursing home, and I don't know halacha.
I'm going to discuss. All right, there's three. Let's just discuss the topics. There's three chief challenges halachically. Three separate simanim and shulchan aruch that if a person owns a nursing home, they're going to inevitably run up straight against. And there's none of them have simple solutions. The first one is obviously Shabbos. A nursing home, unlike people who had stores in the 30s on Coney Island, Coney Island Avenue in Brooklyn, that there was an assignment to close, but there was a solution. You close it. A nursing home cannot close. So only a nursing home means you're going to have a problem for Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's just the problem. Another problem is that there's an Isser Deraisa in the Torah. A person is not allowed to do business with Mechalas Asuris, with Trey for food. Nevela
Schere.
Schere. It's a Schere. A person is not allowed to use Trey for food to make money. And even though there could be a person maybe is allowed to buy his workers, but when he's using it really to make money, which is what's a nursing home because it's more expensive to buy kosher. So there's really, it's a consensus in the Paiskim, it's Isser Deraisa. So that's number the second problem. Third problem is that even if somehow we're going to bypass these two things, when you have patients in the nursing home that are not religious, you can't feed them non-kosher foods. Also, their eyes, it's lifnei iver, right? And even though people say, well, I have a freezer and we have some sort of airport meal that I bought when I bought the nursing home. It comes with the nursing home. You get this kosher frozen meal, right?
Right.
So therefore, there's no lifnei iver. But that's also pasha in lifnei iver.
So
if a nazir says, one second, if a nazir says, can you give me wine? And I say, okay, here's Pepsi. And he says, I said I want wine. You can't say, well, you have Pepsi, so now I can give you wine, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a patient that says, I want tarfis, you can't give them tarfis. You can't say, well, I have a freezer that there's a freezer-burnt airplane
but
meal.
But if you give them an option of...
Kosher or trade.
If you give them an option of a frozen kosher meal that was made 6 months ago or a fresh hot meal, I mean, they're never, ever going to take the frozen kosher meal if they're not from, right?
Right.
So what do you now? What do?
But he's saying even if you do give him the option,
even if
it doesn't
you
make a difference.
If he says he doesn't want it, and let's say bacon, whatever it is, I want treif. Then you can't give him treif.
On your last challenge that you mentioned,
yeah.
So obviously the frozen meal, it's not apple to apple. You know, you're coming in front of this guy who's a non-religious person, and you're saying, here's the menu that we're serving. It's a hot
Salisbury steak, which is
and then we also have a frozen meal. But if you were to go and say, we have a hot cheeseburger that the whole building is getting, that everybody who's not Jewish, and you have any Jewish, we're going to make you a hot
steak also on your own oven, your own pan. It's going to be a hot meal. And even after offering him a hot burger without the cheese, whatever it is, and he still says, I want what you're serving to everybody else in the building, did you do your duty? Did you do what you have to do?
It's not about doing your duty. You're not allowed to hand them treif. It's like, it's be the same thing as a nazir who says, I want wine. And you say, wine? I have better stuff for you. I have the best drink that's not wine. And he says, I want wine. There is no one who would ever have gone through the suga of Lifnei Iva, I believe. For sure, nothing ever printed.
So what?
That
so okay. So a lot of people.
I'm just saying, these are the challenges.
So those are challenges.
Those
and what are the challenges. What are the, let's say, whether you agree with them or not, what are the solutions?
So let's discuss Shabbos first, okay? So Shabbos is an inherent problem. It's as soon as you discuss the nursing home, you're going to have a problem. So what people came up with, which is the basic concept of the Heter Mechira, I'm just going to say what they did, and I'm going to say the basic problem with it.
How long has the Heter Mechira been around? I'm talking about all Heter Mechiras.
I'll tell you what it is. Right? It's about 150 years old because
right.
it was.
That's
used
what
in
I thought.
Europe.
I thought it was like 1840s. Right?
Somewhat, because in Europe there was a different form, a different type of business they had. They had Kretschmer, they did these wineries.
So wait 1 second. So you see right there that as late as 150 years ago, so they were making. I'm saying they were.
Right.
They were having halachas that were able to conform.
Okay.
To the business.
So right. No. 100%. Of course, we're going to try to make it conform, but it has to actually work. And this is really Reb Moshe's point. Reb Moshe, and I'm just going to say what people do, and then Reb Moshe's very basic point about it. What people do is as follows. They say, well, I can't own this business, so I'm going to go to my Rav and I'll sell the business. So we find a guy, he buys the business. So let's say the nursing home is worth $1 million. So the guy says, I'm buying it for $1 million. Here's a deposit of $100. I owe you $1 million minus 100. Now, the owner of the former owner of the nursing home says, you owe me a lot of money, and I'm not in the business of giving interest-free loans to Gentiles. So I'm going to charge you interest, and the interest is going to be the revach, the profit of the nursing home, right? And the guy says, fine. So what we have here is, in one fell swoop, we have the guy owns the nursing home, the yid owns the profit, because this fellow is not in the position to pay up the loan, and that's it. So what we have here is
the guy owns the whole nursing home.
We sell the whole thing, lock, right. Stock, and barrel. The guy owns the nursing home, but the guy didn't pay for it. So the guy owes money to the yid, which just sold
him. $900,
$1 million minus 100.
So it's okay. It just seems like a loophole, you know?
It's going to be a loophole, but the question is it a workable loophole? Is it not? A loophole is what we're trying to do here, but it has to be a legal loophole, not an illegal loophole. So the question is it legal or is it illegal? So basically what we're doing is similar to a Mechiras Chametz, which is also a deraisa b'yosodei. A person is not allowed to own chametz, he sells it to a guy. So I can sell my chametz to a guy, why can't I sell my nursing home to a guy? A nursing home, pashas nana, is a deraisa, milakam, is a derabonin. So I'm selling my nursing home, and I work it in a way where the person who bought it is not making the money, because he owes me money, and against it I'm taking the ribbis, the interest. And therefore, we just satisfied all the issues with negei Shabbos. That would be the plan. So Rav Moshe comes with a very simple point, and
that only helps for Shabbos.
Right, that only helps for Shabbos.
What do you mean that only helps for Shabbos?
Samir Lakum is Drabbanan, but Nevelis and Travis is Drayson.
Why if he owns the kitchen? If he owns the kitchen, he owns the food.
Okay, fine. And maybe it'll help.
Which
for
is
that.
Always
it,
the
it
case.
It will help for everything besides Lifnei Iva, because you still control the nursing home, and you're the one who's deciding what you're still running it. And the way they do it is that the guy who bought it, since he didn't pay for it, can't come in and start saying.
You have a chief operating officer who's a guy who's...
Well, before, one step at a time, Nassan, step at a time.
Don't give away all your business secrets. Here, you know what I mean?
Can you contract the dietary out to a third-party vendor?
Well, that's the best thing. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to really... It's called a food service.
Right, like Aramark. Right. They're the vendor, and you're giving
So that would help
PPD
for two of the three problems.
Per patient.
That would not help for Shabbos.
But that's what everybody's doing,
well, they do that, that's the best thing. But Shabbos, let's discuss
Shabbos. Nassan, do you do that in your nursing homes? Is the dietary in-house or it's contracted?
With the kitchen?
Yeah.
The kitchen is in-house, but we actually don't contract it out. But there are people that do that. We happen to not contract out.
Okay, but I just want to follow up on what I was saying. So this would have been the simple solution. It's a legal loophole. The guy owns it, and I get the profits, and therefore it's his business. This is the problem, and this is Rav Moshe's point. This is not my point, but it's really a very simple mathematical point. It's not very complicated what he says. And he says as follows. There's a mefurshah halacha in Shulchan Aruch, b'negei amir la'akum, that if a yid owns a business and he finds a guy that knows how to run a business, knows he has a talent, for something, so he tells the guy, I'm putting up the money and you run the business. You run it. It's my business. You run it. So the halacha is, it's mutter for the guy to run it on Shabbos because he is what we call the baal malacha. He's running. The workers are working for the guy who's running it, not the equity owner, the silent partner. He's working. The workers are working for the fellow that's actually running the business. In the Rishayim, the problem of Mila Akum is that the goyim in the business are working at daitai for whoever their boss is. So says Reb Moshe, a very simple point. If a guy is running a yid's business, all the goyim in the company could work because they're working for the guy who's running the business. So what happens when you have a yid who owns a business and he makes an equity swap and he sells the equity, but the guy who bought it cannot run the business because he didn't pay up the loan, which is how it works. We don't give control to this guy who just bought it through the Rav. Whoever, the yid who owned the nursing home is still running it. So who's the Baal Malacha? Who do the goyim in the nursing home work for? The answer is, they work for the yid because he's controlling it. So Rav Moshe, hold on. So
this is what Rav Moshe's point.
Give me a second. So this is what Rav Moshe says. So Rav Moshe says, a chutz that it's a harama, and a chutz that it's a marasayin. He says, and that's true, but sometimes if it's a harama, but there's no other option. Says Rav Moshe, me'ikra adin le'osav le'klum. You didn't do anything halacha, which means if we're looking for a legal loophole, it has to be legal. But if it's an illegal loophole, they might as well not even do it at all. So that's Rav Moshe's point, and it's just 100% true. And this was an egeia. The whole shaila
according to what you're saying, in a perfect world, Rabbi Kushner, this arrangement of the loan with the interest going to the yid, in order to pay back the loan, and it happens to be that guy that you do this arrangement with is also the top dog in the company, not just I'm a lawyer, not just I'm a friend of
guys. He's a regional manager. He's a guy there.
He or she is a guy who actually is the face of the company from everybody. He hires and fires everybody below that person. If there's no one above this person.
That is. And if you have a guy that's running it, you might not even have to do. I want to segue into a different point because this is like a little hobby of mine. Anytime I meet someone who's in an industry which inherently has to be open on Shabbos, so I ask them what they do for Shabbos, right? I want to just tell you how it works because I know how business owners are. Business owners, you ask them about anything in their business, anything, and they know everything. They know everything about their business, everything how it works, the smallest thing to the bigger things. And if it's a real big business and they can't answer every question, they'll know right away who to call that can't answer the question. But when you ask them a lot of times about Shabbos, they develop a major stutter. And they're like, I have a guy. My partner took care of it. Okay, so call your partner. Okay, I'll call my partner. Calls his partner. Partner, you took care of it. I don't know what you're talking about. You took care of it.
It's interesting.
I wanted to say something.
Macabre your Musser.
I wanted to say something. Okay. I want to say something. I'm not saying everybody has to do a chatchila, because sometimes people are in a situation with something called a chatchila b'dievet. I understand. But the first thing is
how much money.
The first thing is you have to no. This is really important. You have to know what you're doing, which means like this: you have to know your problem, and you have to know how did I solve that problem. And if I could not solve it lechatchila, and this is my matzav right now, I can't. And a mitzvah maybe it's an assignment for me, and maybe a mitzvah I'll do better. But now I can't do it, so fine. But you have to know. You can't just say I went to a rav, and we signed something. Because the kid's gonna, he can ask you, how's your business open on Shabbos? I went to a Rav, he signed something. So maybe I need a drive on Shabbos. I'll go to a Rav, we'll sign something, you know?
So the real star, the way you described it, and the way you had the problem with Ramesh's problem with it, you're saying doesn't work.
Rav Moshe says it doesn't work. Now there are ways to make it work, because and that's what Nassau just said. You could make a Baal Malacha, and that was the story. Moshe Reichman, this is 50 years ago, I have the truba, the original in my house. Moshe Reichman bought at some point Canadian Oil, which is an oil company. And it sounds like it just can't close for Shabbos. Okay, that's the way it is. None of us run oil companies, but if we did, we would know. It doesn't close on Shabbos.
I'm looking into it.
So he sent a shaila to Meshver. He sent this out to Meshver about what he should do about Shabbos. And Meshver wrote this whole truba back and forth with Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe made a very simple point. Who's the CEO? who runs the company? Is that a guy? He said, then he's the Baal Malacha. There's no issue. He's the Baal Malacha. And that's really, and he said, so Meish Rachman said, I don't need the Parnassa. Is it a heter? Is it Bidiyevin? He said, it's 100% not a shaila. If you have a guy running a company, then the guy who's working, the Akum, there's no sugya, right? And this is when he owned 100% equity in the company. And unfortunately, a lot of nursing homes are the exact opposite of Canadian Oil, where they're giving out the equity, and they own 100%. They don't own any part of the company, but they are 100% the Baal Malacha, and then you're running against a very simple problem with Shabbos. But
what do you mean they're 100% Baal Malacha?
They are in charge. They didn't give the guy a right to do anything. The guy legally has no right to do anything in the company because he didn't pay up the loan. So they're 100% in charge. That
guy's some random guy who has nothing to do with the company at all.
It could be a guy that lives next to...
Why aren't they...
The guy who lives next to the Rav.
So people should be just doing it with their regional staff.
You know what? There are people that are nursing homes.
Most nursing homes have profit-sharing guyim with them.
There are small mom-and-pop nursing homes that don't have guyim. But you're right. I'm not saying it is not solutions, but you have to understand the problem.
But there are incentive bonuses in nursing homes. There are people, you know, there are marketers there. There are 100% ways to...
Sat down with people that have 40, 50 nursing homes, and they sat down with their lawyers, and we worked it out. And the goyim right now are 100% running. They're the only people that could hire. They're the only people that could fire. They're the only people that can give a raise. The owner, the yidden, they make a referral about what they want doing, but they don't have control. And the only thing they could do is fire the Baal Malacha, but they can't tell the Baal Malacha what to do.
While we're talking about this inyan, let's welcome to the studio a very close chaver of mine from Chicago as well, Shimon Webster, one of the chashuve ear from Chicago, tremendous Baal Tzedakah, super.
So Shimmy, I'm assuming that this kind Shimmy, of stuff, we, the halacha is, stuff, you leave up to Freddie primarily, right?
He's our resident plaisik, absolutely. In-house plaisik. The person that I'm using is my number one director of operations. She's the most involved in the company you can get.
That's beautiful.
Okay, great. Great. You're good.
And Shimmy, the guy, meaning, and the guy know that they're working for him to a certain degree.
It's a her.
Her. The goyim, no, meaning she has a presence in the company as a...
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And does the star work when we come on to move on along to kashrus?
No, so that becomes very different because kashrus, we're discussing the first segment that Shabbos depends on who's running the program. So what we need to do is we need to make that the workers are working for a Gentile. And that does not equity, that's not an equity-based heter, that's just, it's a practical metziyistik. Heter, are they work? Who's the Baal Malacha? When it comes to kashrus is more similar than tchametz. It really depends on who owns it. So lechetchila, if you're going to have nevelis and treifas going through your nursing home, the best thing to do, and we'll start with the best and then we'll go down the ladder, but the best thing to do is really to have a food service. And what that means is that you have it contracted out where you don't own the nevelis and treifas. Because if your company owns nevelis and treifas, if you have a partnership in a company that owns nevelis and treifas, then you have a problem. It doesn't
make a
difference.
Meaning a third-party vendor.
It doesn't make a difference if you have a guy that's a partner. A yid cannot be a partner in a company that is using...
My husband here doesn't even make her a partner. It makes her the owner. I'm leasing out all my buildings to her.
She's 100% the owner.
That's the way the lease works.
And she owns the Nevelis Treifas.
That's the way the lease works. Okay.
Fine. Bring in a second line or no?
So how do you guys make any money?
Because the way the lease works is there's a large annual lease rate that's due on, let's say, the commencement date of the lease, and the shtar reads that, like, since she can't come up with the money right now, I'm going to loan her the money at 10%, and at the end of the year, if she can't pay me that money, you know, if the profits are not enough, if she has any money left over, she's guaranteed X salary or 0.1% of earnings or something like that.
So I'll just explain you why. I'm just going to explain you why a food service is molech etchila, because ultimately... Benigay Shabbos, she's running the show, that's fine. But ultimately, you're being semich on a mechira, which probably is not... She's the legal owner of your company?
No.
There was dead silence.
She's the legal owner of your nursing home. She legally owns the food.
No, she's not on the licensure.
Does she legally own the food?
Yeah. I mean, I would also pull out this lease agreement in court and say, listen, I leased it to her.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. That's what it would come down to. Then you'd get into the, you know, into the ambiguous, muddled sugya called harama. Does she really own the food or not? That's why the best would be is you just actually hire a food service. I'm not saying everybody could do that, but
actually, I was wondering about that China also. Propco, Opco. You think the Propco needs to have a heads of material?
Just for the audience, let's just explain. The Propco is the real estate, and the Opco is the operations.
It's very catchy.
Yeah,
I'm surprised.
Propco, Opco.
I never.
So there's two separate entities. There's the entity that owns the real estate, and that leases the real estate to the entity that actually operates
irrelevant.
A nursing home.
The real estate's irrelevant unless you want to start doing maybe some renovations on the real estate.
If you're in the real estate business, you can't control your tenants from eating Nevados and Dreyfus. Maybe you should have.
Well said.
Good question.
No, well said.
Is it fair to say that Nevados and Dreyfus are on a totally different level than Boston Bachalov?
Of course they're on a different level. Bas B'cholov's also Bahanoah. It becomes much, much more chamer. But Bas B'cholov, contrary to most people's awareness, it's not so easy to get Bas B'cholov. Bas B'cholov, you have to get a good heksher to make real Bas B'cholov. Bas B'cholov has
a cheeseburger where it's cooked together.
A cheeseburger is not Bas B'cholov because it's not cooked together. It's grilled. Grilled is a shayla. There's two shaylas by Bas B'cholov. There's Rishitas Rishayim that Bas B'cholov is only Bas B'cholov might only be by kosher by a kosher food like
because Ainis or Chalal
Isser. Ainis or Chalal
Isser. I know that.
Very good. She's a Rambam.
They should leave a little bell here for when I get something like
Diane
that.
Diane Schwartz.
Right.
Boom.
Should be like a little bell for whenever I get something like that. Right.
Ainis or Chalal Isser.
The Rambam shit is you only have Bas B'cholov on kosher food. So if it's not kosher, it's not Bas B'cholov. And that betziruf with the fact that it's not cooked, it's only grilled. So it's not so. People think it's easy to get Bas B'cholov. Bas B'cholov needs. We have to make like a kashrus organization. Meaning, if a person makes a soup and there's meat and there's butter, then it's Bas B'cholov. But a McDonald's cheeseburger usually is not Bas B'cholov. But when the person does a Bas B'cholov, it becomes extremely chamer because then you can't be nene, you can't be profiting off of it. It doesn't make a difference who owns it. But Nevels and Trev is just a question of who owns it, which is why if you have a food service, you don't own it. You're in the clear. But
And that takes care of Lifneiver also.
No, so Lifneiver is something else. Lifneiver depends on who's actually feeding it. There's so many problems with Lifneiver. If you have a patient that can't feed himself, and then you have your workers are feeding them, it doesn't make a difference who owns the food. It's your people feeding them. So a person is not allowed to feed someone else's wine to a nazir. So it doesn't make a difference who owns the food. It makes a difference who's actually serving it, which might come back to...
Can I just clarify with the when you say you have a food service, let me just explain to you the contract. Maybe you know this already. You outsource your kitchen to a company. You write this company one check a month. Right. You have nothing to do with the menus. You have nothing to do with the food ordering, the people that work there. It's one check a month to this company. They manage the entire kitchen. At the end of the day, though, every one of those employees and the food that they order and the calories that they're getting and the calorie counts and the menus that you're required to do by the public health and Medicare, Medicaid, and all that stuff, it, at the end of the day, if there's a mess up, it falls back.
Yeah, it's your responsibility.
The operator.
It's your responsibility, but you outsource the ownership of the food. So you don't own the food. So when it comes to the issa schira, a person can't do business. It depends on who actually owns it. And if you don't own it, if you outsource that ownership, then you're in the clear.
And once it enters your building, you don't call that ownership. It enters into your building, even though they bought it, and it's in your storeroom, but it's their food.
It's a service. It's a food service because it's a service. You're paying them to take care of the food needs of your patients. So, that's their responsibility. They have to make that your patients are fed, but you don't actually take ownership of the food, no. Now, what we didn't discuss is another thing with a food service, and this is another point, is that when a person has a food service, and he leaves it up to the food service what to serve. He tells the food service, listen here, this is your budget. I'm not telling you to serve kosher or treif. So when it comes to Lifnei Iver, if you have irreligious Jews in the nursing home, there's a concept in the Gemara that you can't do Lifnei Iver. You can't give Yayin Lenozir. But Lifnei the Lifnei is Mutter, which means you can't sell, let's say, Levina, which is incest, things used by Avodah Zarah. You can't sell it to a guy who's used by Avodah Zarah. You could sell it wholesale, the Gemara says. You could sell it like a 3-pack. Because you know that guy's not using it. Why is he buying so much? He's going to sell it to the end user. That's called lifnei d'lifnei. So if you have a food service, this is the psak that I heard many times from my father-in-law, Shlomo Miller. If you have a food service, what you're doing is, even though ultimately they're your patients, It's lifnei delifnei. I'm giving it off to someone else. I'm saying you take care of the food. I'm not instructing you to give treif. You do what you want. Obviously, they're not interested in throwing kosher. So what you did is you made like a barrier, like a level between you and the recipient, and then it becomes lifnei delifnei.
But not if your workers are feeding.
So if your workers are feeding, that's something else. If the people could eat it themselves, then you're just doing that. That's fine. As long as they could feed themselves, that's okay. If they become they can't feed themselves, then you
have a problem. No,
then you have a problem.
So at the end of the day, we've covered a lot of these very problematic issues. Baruch Hashem, I see my friends, Nassan, Al-Shemi, they seem to have very l'chatchila under control. But for a guy who's listening to this podcast and thinking of saying, hey, why don't I buy a nursing home? Seems like everybody else has one.
And you basically have half the information already right there.
Right here. Business, and I'm seriously considering it, maybe.
Just
maybe
take
I'll
this
buy one. Are they expensive? Are they expensive?
You can get them a dime a dozen.
Dime a dozen. That's what it seems like.
They're very
like,
cheap now. Yeah.
So a guy who's listening to this, or someone in a different business who's maybe hearing some of these issues that come up. These issues are not just, a lot of these issues are not just miyuchid for that type of issue. What should they do? What could they take? Like the mashkiach used to always say, when you hear a shmuz, you have to do something with it right away. What would you say?
The first thing they really have to do is they have to educate themselves and understand what are the issues. I'm not mean to plug my book to go through it, but a lot of people call me.
But this is a good opportunity.
This is a good opportunity. But when people call me and I see they don't understand what the problem, like you have to first, what are the issues? You really have to understand. Mashal, we were just discussing nursing homes. We didn't discuss Shabbos. You can't make money on Shabbos. That's a whole different segment. But almost all businesses that are functioning on Shabbos do have a Shabbos issue. And many, many times where I bought them, call me and like they have constituents that have businesses. They're like, I don't even know what the problem is, but I'm just going to tell you what this guy does, but it doesn't sound like this is being done right. Tell me the problem. But that's the first thing. You have to educate yourself what the problem is. And once you know the problem, then you start working your way through it. What's the best solution I could do now, today? And then, for example, with real estate, people call me a lot of times and they have a super, and the super has to work on Shabbos because it's for emergencies. And there's sometimes better solutions, but the solutions will take 4 months because we have to redo the contracts with the tenants to make that the tenants are employing the super, whatever it is in this case of real estate. But you can't do that today. So today, what's the best thing I could do? And over the next 6 months, what's the best thing I could do? But the most important thing is you really have to understand what your challenges are and how what you're doing is solving that somewhat, and at least you understand.
And they do that by calling you or reading your book.
Oftentimes.
Commerce and Shabbos.
Oftentimes.
So basically what we're trying to say here is that the only way that one can have guidance in this is to read the book, Commerce and Shabbos, from beginning to end.
And also,
you could buy it on Amazon for $36.50.
So everybody tomorrow, after they hear this, should go speak to the rabbi and say, listen, this is what I do for a living. What are the problems? And how can we fix them?
Or just read the book Commerce and Shabbos.
Right. And then all seriousness, after that, there's so many different levels of how you could just make it better and better. And it's really something I would think that if you're concerned about your business, I mean, Shabbos is the Mekar HaBracha. I would think this should be a focus. I really think it's
Thank
important.
You, Rabbi Kushner.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kushner. Wonderful.
Probably our best guest that we've had so far.
Probably. Well, maybe Shimmy.
So since we're actually recording in the Lavovitz family studio, it reminded me of when I actually went to Rabbi Rucham Lavovitz's kever. And a crazy story was, we were in the mirror. We were a bunch of guys. We were in Moscow for summer for Operation Open Curtain as Bachram, and we were going to Belarus to tour. We were going to go to Mir, Volozhin, and Radin. And we came to Minsk.
Three of the hot spots.
Yeah, big spots to go to. And we went to Mir, Volozhin, and Radin.
It's the restaurants like in Radin. Is there?
I think he's getting to something.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So the guy comes. We get in a car in Minsk. They didn't really have anybody waiting for us. We had to like flag down this guy. And we're like, we want to go to Mir. Okay, we went to Mir. We went to the Kever Rabbi Rucham. Very inspiring. Went to the yeshiva. Someone said over Shtikel Taira in the old post office Mir, B'Shem Rabbi Osher Arieli. It was, you know, connecting the past and the future it was in. And then we started driving to Radin, and we're driving. And we're supposed to go back that night. The train was supposed to go back that night. We're driving all over Poland. It's getting this. And then we finally pull up.
And the guy's looking around, and we're like, he's like, okay, Disraden. We're like, okay, let's go, Chavetz Chaim. So, and he starts asking people on the street, Rabbiner.
You don't mention that the Rabbiner was dead. Yeah, we're looking for some Rabbiner.
Rabbiner, everybody's telling us, and this, and finally, we can't figure out what's going on. And finally, after like he has like this frantic conversation in a different language, and it's amazing how you know that this is not good or whatever, and you don't understand the language, and he turns around and he goes, ah, Turadin.
Two radin.
Dva radin. Yes,
radin.
Apparently there's two radins.
It's like the wrong Belarus. Yes.
So we went to the wrong radin, not the Chofetz Chaim's radin. Yeah. And then there was no time to do anything else, so we had to just drive home, drive back to Minsk, and go back to thing. It was great because after Venizman, everybody's like, "Oh, where'd you go over the summer? Oh, we went to Mir. Ah, very nice. Went to Bruchen. Yeah, you went to Radin. Yeah, went to Radin. Yeah, you saw the Chofetz Chaim. No.
You did the other things in Radin.
The other things.
There were other tourist attractions there.
True story.
As we continue here on Headlines Decaffeinated with Elchanan Schwartz, Yisroel Friedman, and our special guest this week, Nesanel Nathan Davis, we want to introduce a segment that we plan on doing whenever we host the show, and that segment is called Game Changers, where we interview some of the people who are making a difference right now in Klal Yisroel and hear about what they're doing and how they're doing it. This week we have a very special guest on the line, Yisroel, a good friend of yours, I believe, actually.
Yes. Harav HaGoyim. I know he said, let's not pump anything and not give him any titles, but I just want to jump in here and say, because this is someone that has been a mentor of mine for so many years, Harav HaGoyim. Some will call him a Goyim, because he is a Goyim in what he's done, Sal Werdiger, who is not only is he the president of Agudas Yisrael of America, some people
chairman of the board. Chairman of the board, I correct you. Chairman of the board.
Chairman of the board, okay. And also he is the president, I don't even know if they call it president, in Ichud Moses Ger. He's the president and the founder of a organization that is very close to my heart, and you know that, Sal, is Project Refuah. Which is amazing. We're not going to get into the whole everything that Refuah and Camp Werdiger does, but that's just one of his many, many projects, and that's just it's amazing, amazing. And also, he is on his spare time. He is the president, founder, and CEO of Outerwear, which is a multi-billion
outerwear.
He has a huge company. He has a lot of influence, and he's just a wonderful person. He's extremely approachable. Sal, I'm saying this, mikta shvachei b'fanav, but I mean, there's very few people that you meet with your influence and your power that are just so approachable, and I literally could call you on the phone at any time, and you pick up. That's like right there and then. He doesn't have kids in shidduchim. He's just easy to reach, very approachable. He has so much on his head. Is Nesanel still on the line?
Of course, I'm right here.
Nesanel, you and I together had this chut of last night, or was it two nights ago, being at the Aguda dinner. What a monumentous dinner that was. What an amazing, I mean, it was just so moving. I was only there for about 45 minutes, but I could say I was well-fed and extremely, extremely inspired. So there's for my intro.
That's quite the intro.
I'll take any opportunity to speak to the next generation and talk about the importance of not only the work of the Aguda, but the importance of the younger generation getting involved in whatever. That's what I spoke about at the dinner. That's what I talk about all the time. Nesanel knows that. I always say that I shouldn't say the word jealous, but envious of the Chicago community, because they effectively did that. The friends of mine, the Askanim of that in Chicago, basically groomed their kids and the next, not only their kids, but the next generation of Askanim to take over, which they did very effectively and are doing unbelievable, terrific work. And I think, you know, that's what we need to do here too. I say it all the time, I say that, you know, there's today the younger kids, everybody's in a rush. You're in a rush to make money. You're in a rush to spend money. You're in a rush to to get involved in stockists and things that you could see a quick fix, which is very admirable. Chas v'sholem, that's not a chesaron. I think that's a great idea. You want to help somebody's in a time of need. You call a parlor meeting. You raise $500,000. You solve the problem. You walk away feeling great that you were able to help a person or a family or a moisid or a situation. But Klal Yisrael work is a lot different. It's time consuming, and you don't see the payers. You don't see the instantaneous gratification. You don't see it. You could see something, and it could take years to develop that relationship that maybe in 2 years from now you have a relationship with somebody, and that pays off for Klal Yisrael. So it's a lot more difficult to get the next generation interested.
Well, specifically with the Aguda, and you mentioned Chicago, because Chicago is unique like that. What do you think nowadays? It doesn't, you know, the Aguda 70 years ago was, everybody felt like they were part of Agudas Yisrael. I know my grandfather, Aguda was everybody's organization, and it seems like now
there's
a little bit of a disconnect.
I hear that a lot. It's really, listen, 70 years later, the needs of Klal Yisrael are much bigger, much greater, and there's a lot more people doing things, so which is great. I see that as a tremendous milestone. There's so many more organizations getting involved in different things of the community, but at the end of the day, and that's what we tried to show last night at the dinner, at the end of the day, Klal Yisrael's address for really serious, major problems and advocacy is still Agudas Yisrael. It doesn't make a difference if it's, whether it's take a look. I mean, we got the Secretary of Education to come down and visit two yeshivas. It's monumental. I mean, if we could ever solve or accomplish what was accomplished in Cleveland and in some of the other states in terms of vouchers, we could save Klal Yisrael. But it's time-consuming work. The fact that we don't have good public relations, you know, the Gedolim always felt that every Mietzis meeting that I've been to, they always felt effective advocacy is done behind the scenes, is not done to toot your horn. We live in a different world today, as you guys know. So today, if you don't toot your horn or if you don't let people know what you do, there's a chance of becoming, irrelevant. So I think that's the problem.
But in Cleveland, for example, the vouchers, that has literally, I don't want to say saved that town, but that has made such an impact.
That saved the town. It saved other people that are coming to the town.
Right.
Not just saved the town. It fostered the growth of that town. I mean, somebody come. Obviously, there's relatively cheaper housing there, and thanks to my good friend Mendy Klein, there's a lot of kollelim. Mendy Zichron Levracha, but vouchers, there's no question about it. That's what did the community. And let's be honest about it. The biggest problem facing Klal Yisrael today is Schar Limitis tuitions. There's no doubt in as our families grow, there's 150,000 kids today in New York State in yeshivas.
You know better than anyone what's going on behind the scenes, and people every day in Shul are asking the same question: when are the vouchers coming? Are they ever going to come?
Well,
you know?
New York's an issue. It has the strongest teachers union in the whole country. Very, very difficult. A lot of liberal Jews running that organization. It's a problem. Who knows when it's coming? Who knew when Trump was going to blow up the Iran deal and open up an embassy in Yerushalayim, Keheref Ayin? So only the Rebbeinu Shalom knows. We have to continue doing our work. I'll tell you a crazy story. I had breakfast last year with the governor and Cardinal Dolan, who we work together with the Catholics because they have the same problem. They also all non-public school issues. And we made a whole impassioned plea to the governor. And Cardinal turned down to me. He says, "Saul, you know the difference between us and the Jewish schools?" I said, "Cardinal, what?" He says, "We can't afford a school. We have financial issues. We closed the school." He says, "You guys, how do you do it? You never, ever, ever close the school. You never close the yeshiva. You never close the Beis Yaakov." He says, "I really admire your community," and he's right. we don't close them. We open more and more and more. But it's a serious problem. We're working on it. And who knows when the Baruch Hashem is going to send the refuah.
Send the refuah.
But we have to. You got to do your shtadlonis. You know, tell the young guys all the time. They ask me, you know, sometimes you bang your head against the wall. This guy goes to shul every morning and he davens or Baruch Hashem. My family is poor. I don't have any money. Could I win the lottery? You know, he does it 1 day, 3 days, 4 days. Finally, after a week, a bus call comes down and says it would help if you buy a ticket. you got to buy a ticket. Everybody has to help. You can't just, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks are great. But I think the young guys, if we go to Albany, more guys have to volunteer to come. If we go to City Hall, more guys.
What's a regular guy? As a regular guy, let's say,
how does he volunteer?
Would love to do something for that good. Would love to get involved. You got it covered. It seems like everybody. You know, there's a lot of people.
We don't have it covered, and that's. Again, we got. That's why we had this Lefkowitz, the Young Leadership Initiative. We didn't quite take off quite. I think that good. One of the things that's important for me is to put the Aguda on a strong financial footing, so we can hire more people. This all requires manpower. This is the hardest working staff that I've ever seen. And you know, I'm in the business world. I come across a lot of companies. You know, every year the I think it's the Forwards publishes a survey of salaries in Jewish organizations, and Chaim David's Rebel ends up on the bottom of the list, not because his name starts with a Z, because he's the lowest paid guy in all.
And he's the president, right?
He's the executive vice president. But
is there a president?
Since Rabbi Shera, there has not been a president.
Ah. Okay. So it's like Chabad.
Who are the A's on that list, and what are their salaries?
Well, other federation people that raise a lot of money, organizations that have income-producing businesses, which Daguda does not, but it's important. We've hired more. The more work we do advocacy, we have to hire more lawyers. You have to hire. You have to.
How about the CMHS? Is that an income producing?
CMHS. Yeah, if we can accelerate learning of the shas and make a CM every 2 years instead of every 7.5 years, we probably.
That's a good program. Make a mini CM every three years.
The organization can't sustain itself on maybe making money on the CMHS whenever that comes around. That's a whole other discussion. Next time you'll get me on. We're in the initial staging plans of the next CMHS.
Because it's going to be in the middle of the winter, right? That's the problem, right?
It's a problem. I don't know. Depends for who it's a problem.
You're a coach.
We can have another conversation. We'll bring some more people involved. On the other hand, how do you take a monumental Kiddush Hashem? There hasn't been a gathering like that of Yidden together since probably Har Sinai. And six years later, people are still talking about the tremendous Rosh Hashanah. I mean, people who are so inspired that are learning today. And right. we're working on it. On the other hand, you have to be cognizant of elderly people and things that want to come and that can't sit outside in the cold for 2.5-3 hours. So we're working on it.
I think the easy solution is to just invite them into your box.
No, let's see.
I'm a Polish.
I buy a seat outside, you know.
But
again, getting back to really I think that and my legacy that I'd like to give over and we could talk a little bit about my good friend Mendy Zichron Levracha was really to get our both of us we spent this Pesach together. We spent 15 years. Sholosh Regolim together. We went away for Sukkot and Shavuos to Eretz Yisrael and Pesach. Wherever we went together with our families. And this Pesach, he sat by me in my house in Orlando 4 hours a day. And really the majority of the conversation was around how Baruch Hashem, we both have nachas that our children and the next generation understand the value of askonis, of giving tzedakah, of giving back, and that's really, you know, it's great to, you know, to be successful. But if you don't do anything with it, what's the point? So, that was his really, that's his legacy. He was just but his biggest nachas that he had, that he felt that he had success in transmitting his mesar and transmitting his chesed to the next generation, especially his family. So
I want to just say, I know you have a very limited amount of time. I just actually heard a story about you, Sal, and I meant to ask you by the dinner, but you were overwhelmed, so it wasn't the right timing. And this is just such a great story that I heard that happened in the Gera convention. I want you to verify if it's true. The Gera convention in Schweiz, I guess when all the major donors of Ger come together, and somebody got up there and said, it's pasnish that the president of the Ichud Moises Ger doesn't have a beard. And you want to pay, this is the story I heard the story. He says, I'm going to give $1 million if the president of Ger puts on a beard. And you got up and said, make a real donation and we'll talk about it. So is that a true story?
Well, first of all, I'm not the president again, but yeah, I said to that guy, I said, you're insulting me. I said, today, in today's world, what's $1 million? I said, if for $10 million, we could sit down and have a conversation. So
That's great. And I want you to know something. You amongst others, and you know, people like Shlomi Huda and people like Mendy and people like Ralph have really changed the way people give and the way people think to give. Is just, it's mind-boggling. What we've heard, what we've seen over the last 7-8 years is the amounts of money that people give to Tzedakah, and I'm sure a lot of these people are giving almost irresponsibly, but they do it because they're so passionate about it and because they believe in it, and it's just, it is an amazing thing to see.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, the younger generation, I keep on saying all the time, Baruch Hashem, I'm really so proud of the younger guys. I mean, the level of chesed, but their hasagas, their hasagas in giving is a lot different. I could have friends, very comfortable or wealthy individuals, and, you know, they still think that, you know, giving $5,000 or $10,000 for something is giving an awful lot of money. I have young guys coming in who are writing checks for $18,000, $25,000, and it's not bothering. So it's not just the fact that they're giving; it's the hasagas in giving, and the Klal Yisrael, the hasagas. We need big hasagas because the needs are so big today. You know, so in the old days, you know, even in Garrett, I go to Garrett, this Yom Tov, I was there, Shavuos, there were, I think, 17,000 people davening at the Beis Medrash.
Wow.
You know, we're building a Mirtz Hashem, a new Beis Medrash today that's going to be able to hold 35,000 people in one Beis Medrash. So the Hasagas have to be different, too. The old guys, you know, we built a Beis Medrash for, you know, for 2,000-3,000 people. If you gave $5,000, it was called a good Nesina. Today we have, Baruch Hashem, 5 or 6 families that are giving $5 million each to build this new Beis Medrash. So the Hasagas have to be different. And I always say over to the young guys, I said, if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam sees that your Hasagas are bigger, then he's going to say, well, here's a guy that I need to make big Hasagas for him as well. So that's I always say that. I said that if the Rebbeinu Shel Olam sees that you have big Hasagas, that you're bright, and that he'll be bright with you too. And I think that's Mendy always said that. He said that his success was always that he always had big Hasagas and he always had brighter places. And he feels that was the reason for his success. Rebbeinu Shel Olam said, "Here's a guy who's bright. I'm going to be bright." He doesn't ask too many questions about where he's giving. Everybody that came, he didn't even listen
just
to what guy.
Just give and don't ask questions. I think.
Yeah, he never asked. The guy came into the house and started giving him a half an hour. He says, "Do me a favor, save me the pitch. Here's a check." Leave. The guy's looking at him like, "You're crazy. You don't even know what I came to talk about." He says, "Who cares? You came in, giving you the money. I'd rather give it to you than have to listen to 15 minutes for your story." So you don't ask too many questions. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam doesn't ask too many questions either.
Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. That's Sol Werdiger, man of many, many hats. And we really appreciate you giving us some time to talk about the Aguda and the work that you do for them.
My pleasure, guys. Atzlach in everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sal.
Inspiring words. Thank you.